Welcome to Voting Matters, a series of conversations about the voting process from WUKY and the League of Women Voters. Now, here's your co-hosts, Liza Holland, president of the Lexington chapter of LWV, and WUKY's Alan Lytle.
Hello again, Liza.
Hello, Alan. So glad to be here.
Yes, this is episode 2 of our Voting Matters, and we're just trying to put out the information so that folks that are going to the polls will have all of that information at their fingertips, because an informed voter hopefully casts an informed ballot.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the most important rights that we have as citizens is the ability to vote. So I'm real excited that today we're going to be talking a little bit about restoration of voting rights.
Yes. And we have a special guest in the studio who's intimately aware of the process.
Yes, indeed. I'd love to introduce Mr. Tip Moody. Tip, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hello, everyone. My name is Tip Moody, and yes, I am very well acquainted with the issue of voting rights restoration. I myself have been disenfranchised and regained my voting rights under Governor Beshear's Executive Order 2019-003, which restored my right to vote and gave me the right to run for public office.
And I guess it's important to explain how it works in Kentucky. Each state, I guess, has different rules, correct?
That is indeed correct. Kentucky is one of only three states in the country that takes away your right to vote for the rest of your life for any felony that the legislature can determine. The other two states are Virginia and Iowa.
So we actually have a little bit of progress in that area, although the legislature wasn't able to take care of it. Our governor, Andy Beshear, was able by executive order to do some restoration of voting rights. Can you tell us a little bit about that executive order?
The governor's executive order gave the right to vote back to almost 200,000 people. It was grandfathered in. It was retroactive and proactive. It was only for convictions in the Commonwealth. Out-of-state convictions and federal convictions were excluded. It was only for nonviolent, mostly Class D felonies.
It's a fairly new thing that this executive order by Andy Beshear came through. So probably a lot of people still don't even know that they might possibly be able to get their votes, their voting rights back. Is that correct?
That is indeed correct. I can tell you anecdotally that when I have been out speaking to groups and to various individuals, they are not aware that their voting rights have been restored. The governor's executive order stipulates that the Department of Corrections is to inform you when your voting rights have been restored, that you are eligible to get your voting rights back. And I will say that I did not learn that my voting rights were restored until I read a letter from Jen Jackson, who was president of the Lexington League of Women Voters, in my hometown paper, the Justman Journal. She had written a letter to the editor talking about this, and I thought, well, golly, I have finished all of my sentence. My offense fits. I got to check this out. I did, and I was eligible to get my voting rights back, and I'm also eligible to run for office if anybody, you know, just as an FYI.
So if other people are out there and they, like you, are listening to this podcast and want to check and see whether their voting rights have been restored, where can they go?
They can go to the DOC's website. It's civilrightsrestoration.ky.gov. That's kind of important. And you can scroll down to the check your status link, and you can put in your name, your birthday, your county of conviction, and it will tell you whether you're eligible or not. Now, I will say that for a lot of people, it comes back an inconclusive result. That was the case that happened for me. There's a phone number on the website. And I will not tell you her name, but I will say that the woman who answers the phone at the Department of Corrections is lovely, helpful, and very willing to help answer all your questions and make sure that you get your voting rights restored.
Marvelous. So once the process begins, was it really laborious? I mean, a lot of times government forms are take a lot of doing and whatnot. Was it fairly easy, or do you need to get a lot of information together before you can apply? What was the experience like?
For me, with the inconclusive result, it meant that I had to get some paperwork from another jurisdiction, which required some time and some effort, not only to see what that information was, but to get it transferred from where it was housed to Frankfurt so that everything could be cleared through the system. It took a couple of weeks.
You know, that is so good to hear, because that type of customer service, especially with a population that I would say would be feeling pretty vulnerable, having had their rights taken away. But the wonderful thing is that we as a society have put this system in place where when you have given, paid your debt to society, as it were, then you should be able to participate as a full citizen again. What do you think makes people, you know, if they were hesitant to go down this path, what kind of advice would you give to a person who is thinking about being re-enfranchised like this?
One commonality that I've encountered is that many people don't think that their vote matters. Many who are eligible to get their voting rights restored have never voted. So it's not a cultural norm that they're used to. And, you know, any of us can say that our vote doesn't matter, but it really does. And it's overcoming that obstacle on an individual basis that I find really, really challenging.
And Tip, when did you get your voting rights restored?
It was in the spring of 2020. I was released early from probation. I was released 6 months early from probation. And when I read Jen's letter in the spring of 2020, that's when I followed her advice and her letter to the editor, and the rest is history, as they say.
Can you describe the feeling the first time going to the polling place, knowing that you had your rights restored?
Well, Alan, as a young man, I spent several years in D.C. in political fundraising. So voting and the political process was in my blood. I remember my reaction when my attorney told me that as a result of my felony conviction, I was not going to be able to vote for the next 5 years. I was furious. I had no idea that this was a result of my conviction. He was telling me something that was new to me. So being able to go back and vote for the first time, it was not some celebratory event. It was just going back to what I'd always known.
So often I think people make this assumption that if you've had some sort of run-in with the law, any of it, that you're doomed for life.
Absolutely. And I know for a lot of people, it is celebratory. They are elated to be able to go back to the voting booth, you know, again. And even for those who, for the first time, are able to vote, it is truly a moment of jubilation. And yes, and it was something that, unfortunately, I took for granted. It was something I helped raise money for candidates so that people would vote for them. So, you know, it was just part of who I was.
I think one of the biggest problems that we have today is the apathy of, you know, people not even having this kind of an issue are thinking my vote doesn't matter. And yet it really is one of the most important things that we can do as a citizen. Can you speak to those people who are thinking, well, I won't bother to vote, about what voting now means to you?
I like to share a story of a Kentucky legislator who won his or her last race by 37 votes. Now, that's a very, very close race in the Commonwealth. And I tell someone who thinks that their vote doesn't matter, you know, you could have been one of the 37, and it could have made a difference either way. We look at the race for governor when Jamie Comer was running against Matt Bevin. He lost by what, 83 votes or 91 votes or something? So in purely electoral terms, votes are really important. But when it comes down to using your power as a citizen to make your voice heard, to say who you want to be sent to Frankfurt or Washington to represent your best interest, that right now is the best way we have.
Do you think we need a national policy or a national law about people getting their voting rights restored?
I think we have to look at that two different ways. We have federal elections, and then we have state and local elections. From where I sit, I fully support your position. And I don't think it would be too unreasonable, at least at the federal level for federal elections, for there to be a uniform code of voting for anyone regardless of their felony conviction status. Now, we know that there have been several bills introduced over the past few years to do this. Well, not necessarily concerning felon disenfranchisement, but voting rights in general. That has clearly gone nowhere.
You know, it's really unfortunate. We did an event recently supporting the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. And that is something that was such a treasured piece of legislation for so long. And now we need to be renewing it. So, you know, that appetite, I think it comes from voters, right? It comes from the people who send our elected officials to office. And if they start to hear that the citizenry and their constituents really believe in this right to vote, then maybe that appetite will be created. What do you think?
I fully agree. I think all too often we, the individual voter, and even those of us who can't vote, we are constituents to those we send to their particular elected office. And we are the ones who have the power to bring them home. And I think all too often we fail to use that power in a very visible and real way. But then again, it gets back to the fact that some people don't even want to vote.
But I think to some extent, we have to realize that with that power to vote also comes the power to be able to communicate with our elected officials to let them know what issues are important, you know, because maybe it's voting rights, maybe it's education, maybe it's immigration, who knows? And part of each individual's responsibility as a citizen is to stand up for what they think is right and let those elected officials know that this is how they feel.
Absolutely.
They might be a minority. That could be. But at least if you step up and you make that communication, you know that you've done your little bit for democracy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And Liza, you guys at the League of Women Voters have a number of what I would call, you know, causes that are near and dear to the heart. But this one in particular has long been a pillar of the League of Women Voters, as far as, you know, something to rally around. Talk about that.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, we were founded by the suffragette movement where women didn't have the right to vote, right? So that has been a very core of our foundation, is to make sure that every eligible voter has that opportunity. And so we have worked really strongly in this restoration of voting rights area. We work very hard in transparency. We just put out a report about how government needs to be doing this in a way in which their constituents can understand and have that opportunity to throw their two cents in. But yeah, the ability to vote is at the very core foundation of what the League of Women Voters does. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you think we need to bring forward?
I think a really important thing to know is that the state of felon disenfranchisement in the Commonwealth is constitutionally enshrined from a provision that was passed in 1891. Benjamin Harrison was president. Tchaikovsky conducted his first performance at Carnegie Hall. Men wore starched collars that were 3 inches tall. Okay, morning coats and top hats. So we are dealing with a constitutional provision that was a direct reaction to the 15th Amendment. And whereas Section 145 of our Constitution does not specifically say black men and poor ne'er-do-well hillbillies, that was its sole purpose, was to remove certain populations from the democratic process in Kentucky. And that was 133 years ago. 133 years ago. And still our legislature fails to move on it year after year. Although in 2020, before COVID broke out, we were really close. But in the subsequent legislative sessions, very little has been done. We have several bills that are filed every session, but they are relegated to committee where they go to die. And this is where we get back to us using our voice individually and collectively to take our power to the legislature and say, this is something that is not right that we want undone.
Hear, hear. Hear, hear. You know, progress is awfully incremental when it comes to legislation or an executive order like Governor Beshear decided to put forward. And so people don't realize quite how much evolution there is in these types of initiatives. And I understand that there are some opportunities that that people may not know about, that there are actually some people who are currently in jail that are able to cast a ballot. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Certainly. Anyone who is detained in a Kentucky jail, pre-conviction status, is legally eligible to register to vote. And if they are already registered, they are legally eligible to cast an absentee ballot. This is a provision of Kentucky law that not many jailers are aware of. Certainly the people who were detained are not aware of. There's an issue of capacity. The jailer would have to go through and ask who wants to register after they determine who is eligible. then who comes in to actually register them, and then how do they request an absentee ballot? But a really good thing about requesting an absentee ballot is House Bill 580, which was sponsored by Jennifer Deckard last year. It has a provision that says that the county jailer shall make available a telephone for the detainee to call his or her county clerk to request an absentee ballot. And that is one of those incremental changes that is enormously important.
Absolutely, especially because you are innocent until proven guilty in our system. And we've been kind of letting some of that lag there. That's great news.
Yes. Yes. So if anyone out there has a friend, relative, loved one, or someone you know who is detained and they have not yet been convicted, let them know that they are eligible to request an absentee ballot and vote from jail.
And I guess I would say to anyone listening, your ability to vote is one of the greatest gifts that you're given in our community, in our country. And so make a plan to vote today. Make a plan. Figure out whether you're going to do early voting. I have to give a shout out to our legislature because it's not all bad. That we now have this ability to do early voting. And here in Lexington, we can do it at all of our libraries. And so we've really increased the flexibility and the ability to vote. There's also early voting if you're going to be absentee. We do have more options in Kentucky than a lot of other states do. So have to give them a good shout out to that. And we'll talk in a little more detail with Susan Lamb on our next episode coming up about that one.
I would like to leave you with two quotes from two presidents who are as different as night is from day. The first is from Lyndon Baines Johnson, and I quote, "The vote is the most powerful instrument ever devised by human beings for breaking down injustice and destroying the terrible walls which imprison people because they are different from others." The second quote is from Ronald Reagan, and I quote, "The right to vote is the crown jewel of all American liberties."
Two different ideologies here at play, but they both agree that the vote is the bedrock of our democracy. Well, Tip, we want to thank you very much for coming in today and talking about the restoration of voting rights and how it works in Kentucky. And of course, my co-host Liza, thank you again for bringing this to the fore. And we would just invite people to keep listening because episodes are going to drop from time to time right up until the November election.
Absolutely. And if you don't remember the other website, check out lwvlexington.com, and you can find all about restoration of voting rights there with the direct link.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Liza.
Thank you, Tip.
Thank you. And we will see you next time on Voting Matters.
You've been listening to Voting Matters, a podcast produced in collaboration with WUKY and the League of Women Voters. Subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts, or download Voting Matters from the podcast page at wuky.org. We also have links from the organizations and guests mentioned in this program. See you next time for Voting Matters.